All right, as promised, Jason Lockenfour will talk some NFL football from CBS Sports. Jason, good to chat with you. It's Grant Napier and Doug Christie. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you guys?
Good. What's your best guess at the end of this month when the NFL owners meet and they look at the Raiders' relocation to Las Vegas?
I'm led to believe that it looks pretty good and that enough of these owners, despite having issues about the market in Vegas and its relative merits vis-a-vis what is the known quantity there in the Bay Area and the TV market and what the debt ratio may end up being on this new stadium when, you know, they ultimately have all the details on how it's financed. There seems to be enough support that barring Park Avenue really stepping in and raising some red flags or maybe even slow playing this to push it back towards a vote in May to buy a little more time for Oakland and Alameda County to step forward and do whatever it is they might ultimately do. You know, short of that, then if it comes to a vote, I'll put it to you this way. If you hear that the agenda a week from now, 10 days from now, 2 weeks from now, that teams have been sent the agenda for that meeting, the spring meeting at the Biltmore, and it includes a potential vote for the Raiders, that's not a good sign for Oakland.
What are the chances, Jason, that an agenda is sent out? I mean, is that a time that they would take advantage of, meaning the NFL, and say, you know, while we have everybody here, let's bang this out and figure it out?
Well, the way these league meetings work, especially this one in the spring, is about a week to 10 days before everyone gathers in Arizona, the stadium and finance committee, some of the other more powerful committees will have small committee meetings either in person in New York or sometimes over a conference call. And if that committee feels strongly enough, about what's on the table, that they support it and they believe it's worthy of a vote and worthy of a positive vote, then you're talking about some very influential owners there. And if they proceed forward with it, and that's their report to the league office, and then the league office puts a vote as one of the agenda items, you know, they always send out an agenda, and it always has, you know, what they intend to talk about on each day and what time different.
Right.
You know, small groups will meet, and here's when we'll have, you know, just two representatives per team, which is sort of the most private sort of votes where even the GMs and the cap guys and a lot of those people are out of the room. It's usually just, you know, an owner and his wife or an owner and the team president. When they get down to those, you know, two per club in the rooms, that's when business is really done, and that's when the rubber hits the road and they bring things to a formal vote. So we'll have a better idea when that agenda comes out. They don't have to. I mean, look, as we know, this stadium wouldn't be built until 2019 at the earliest, so they don't have to vote immediately. But I can tell you this, Mark Davis and the Raiders are pushing very, 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 very hard to get 24 guys to raise their hand and say, let's do this, and to have that happen at the end of March.
Yeah, you know, it would be one thing if the city of Oakland or whomever had a concrete plan and a solution that was, you know, for lack of a better term, ironclad, but that doesn't seem to be anywhere in sight. Doesn't that factor into what the NFL may do in terms of, you know, how are they going to prevent Mark Davis and the Raiders from moving to Las Vegas if they don't have anything cooking back in Oakland?
And you know, there's been a back-and-forth dialogue. There's been a lot of meetings. Eric Grubman has spent a fair amount of time there, you know, talking to council people, talking to zoning people. And I've been told that on repeated occasions it's been made clear to Oakland that, look, this won't necessarily be incumbent on you bringing X hundred of millions of dollars to the table in free money, but it will be incumbent upon having a plan for the development, you know, giving the league and or the team a great deal on a parcel or parcels of land and some opportunities to develop areas around that, and that there's been some flexibility. But, you know, it depends who you talk to. Then I talk to other people who say, you know what, Fortress and the city have put together is actually more than enough, and that, you know, there still is sort of a pie in the sky element to Vegas, and that a lot of this is, you know, maybe more political than it is capital, and that when you get a Jerry Jones and you get a Robert Kraft and you get a few of these you know, all-powerful owners behind a concept or an idea, then all of a sudden it has a way of happening, even if it's not as far as long, you know, as physically far along as some might have you believe. So there are certainly various agendas out there, and people kind of have their own skewed view of what's going on. I kind of, you know, my job is to parse through all that and give a solid assessment as best I can tell of where things stand. And right now, again, I'm not going to say that there is unbridled joy over this Vegas development and Bank of America being involved. I'm not going to say that people feel like this is an absolute win for the league, but these are very rich men who have a hard time turning down $750 million in free money, even if a lot of what they think
right.
is, we're going to regret this in 10 years. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, this is going to come back to bite us in the butt, but oh, man, think about the relocation fee and that $750 million. You know, and we all get to play games in Vegas now and, you know, yep. party there and have our fun, like,
how could it be bad for the league? Give me your, you know, look into your crystal ball. Let's say this happens. Give me some scenarios where this could turn out sour for the league.
Well, I mean, how much of a draw is it? Does the allure fade quickly? Is this a transient team where, you know, the first time everybody plays them in their division or the first few years, you get a lot of visiting fans in there and you get the casinos sending people out, but you know, does it really carry? What is the prevailing business spirit there besides the gaming industry? And is that alone enough to carry the day? Look at the foreclosure rate there. Look at what's happened in the housing market. Do people start fleeing that area because it becomes depressed financially?
I got you.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
what are the
sure.
TV ratings, right? Like, this year, all we
sure.
heard was TV down, TV down, TV down, TV down.
Right.
We're talking about a top six market versus the 40th market in the league.
Wow.
So, you know, issues like that. Look, at the end of the day, it's the NFL. It's the product is still king when it comes to American sports. So I don't think it's going to make the league or break the league. But I have always had enough people I really trust, people who are a lot smarter than me, continue to tell me there is a deal to be done in Oakland, but it requires the right people being sufficiently motivated, and I'm often, you know, unsure as to whether or not all those parties are where they should be or need to be.
Jason Lockenfora, CBS NFL reporter. So with your ear to the ground, give me a number, or maybe the kind of number. If there was a raise your hands today, do they have 24 owners?
Probably.
Wow.
I mean, again, if the stadium and finance committee, those eight owners feel like this is worthy of a vote and they support it, then how many dissenting votes really are there in the end?
Right.
You know, I mean, if you're talking about, you've already know that you've got Jerry Jones and Bob Kraft who really want this to happen, and then you get some guys like Arthur Blank and Bob McNair who are seen as a little more prudent, maybe not as gung-ho, maybe not as emotional as some of these other guys, and they're on board as well. You know, then it becomes really the question is, if that's the way the wind is blowing in a copycat league, how many true dissenting votes are there? You know what I mean?
You've
got people like Dean Spanos who feels like he was kind of screwed by the league, you know, with how the whole L.A. thing went down. You know, you've got some of the old school owners, you know, maybe the Giants, maybe the Rooneys in Pittsburgh who just have, you know, trepidation about Vegas just as an entity, period, because of gambling. But when you start talking about, you know, getting 8 to 10 of them to say no, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll look. The one thing I'll say about this league, and I've written it repeatedly in all of my coverage of these various stadium machinations, follow the money. And if it, again, I'll just at the end of the day, $750 million in free money plus a relocation fee, that's going to resonate with a lot
yep.
of these dudes.
Jason, are the Redskins as big of a mess as they appear to be?
Yes, they are. they absolutely are.
Oh boy,
they'll probably put forth some sort of puppet regime. Whether it's a broadcaster like Mike Mayock or Mark Dominic, who is a former general manager of the Tampa Bay Bucs and worked under Bruce Allen there, but you know has been with ESPN for a few years, or whether they promote from within, you know, someone like Alex Santos, a longtime scout there who I actually, you know, think highly of, but would not have a whole lot of juice if he has to report to Bruce Allen and then to Dan Snyder. I mean, look, Dan's taken his building back for like the sixth time in, you know, 18 years. I mean, this is all cyclical. You can go back to when he inherited North Turner, and then he blew out North Turner, and then he gave all the power to Marty, and then he got sick of that after a year and a half, and he fired Marty, and then he hired Spurrier, who was chipping golf balls at practice and had no clue what the hell was going on.
Right.
And then he handed it all to Gibbs, and then after 4 years, that blew up. So then he hired Zorn, who was his puppet, and he ran everything himself, and then that blew up. So then he gave it all to Shanahan, but after 2 or 3 years, they were feuding and fighting over RG3, so then he kicked him out of there, and
was
now he
really
hired Jay Groot. You know what I mean? Like, so it is.
Right.
Yeah,
was he really chipping golf balls at practice?
Oh, that's for real, man. He was working on his swing constantly. You got to love the old ball coach.
Yeah, oh, I love it. Oh,
I
my gosh.
I feel a little of that myself firsthand. That
Jason, that is, Dontari Poe. What do you think the problem? Why didn't Kansas City sign him back, and why do you think that he hasn't signed as of yet?
Well, he had a down year, only one sack. He's had some back issues.
Mm.
This is a guy who 2 years ago, had he hit the market, would have been franchised. Well, they had a situation there with Eric Berry where they were going to have to franchise him for a second straight year.
Okay.
He was by far and away their priority, and then he got 13 plus million a year, which is record-shattering money for a safety. They paid Justin Houston a few years ago. They paid Jeremy Maclin big bucks. They paid their tight end, Kelsey, last offseason. They continue to pay Tamba Hali. They paid Derek Johnson a lot of money. So at some point, you know, the quarterback's making 16, 17 a year. So,
right.
You know, with the salary cap, there's only so much you can do. But Dontari, again, there's issues, people concerned about the back. Only one sack last year, and that's what people pay for ultimately, is can you affect the passing game?
Yeah.
Doing what you do in the run game is nice. It'll keep you in the league. It's not going to get you big-time money. So Dontari's on his way right now from Atlanta to Miami. He visited Indianapolis. He's had 3 or 4 visits. He's going to end up doing a one-year deal. He's going to try to get 12 or 13 million a year. He might not be able to get that. It might end up being 1 year, $10 million. We saw another run-stuffing nose tackle today, Benny Logan do a 1 year, $8 million back in Kansas, you know, deal back in Kansas City where Dontari's leaving. You know, both the Bay Area teams there have sniffed around on him a little bit, have made some phone calls, but haven't scheduled a visit, haven't put anything firm in front of him. We'll see if that changes. But, you know, timing is everything, and he's not hitting the market at the most opportune time, which is why he'd like to do a 1 year deal, try to get himself 6 or 7 sacks next year as a D tackle, and then all of a sudden you're talking about making 15 a year.
Jason, anything new in Dallas with Tony Romo?
Nope, not a darn thing. I think Tony was in Mexico, maybe at Cabo for the weekend, and he's trying to, you know, be measured and just let this thing unfold. He knows there's teams that want him. Jerry Jones is looking around the league and seeing, you know, Brett Favre was traded for a 3rd-round pick late in his career. Sam Bradford was traded for a 1 and a 4 just a few months ago. Alex Smith at one point was traded for 2 2s. You know, Matt Castle was traded off a franchise tag for, I think, a 1 and a 3. So, you know, he thinks there's some value there. And at a certain point, will the sort of opportunity cost of having Tony Romo as a backup quarterback counting 24 against your cap and you're losing some players, at some point do they just say we're going to go ahead and cut him just because, like, we don't want to lose everybody and there's some other things we want to do to our roster? Sure, that could happen, but, you know, there's probably a part of him that's saying, what happens if whoever, Ben Roethlisberger, Joe Flacco, you know, name your contending team, Aaron Rodgers, tears their ACL on the third day of OTAs? What's Tony Romo worth then? You know, so you're weighing all that. Ultimately, we all know Tony won't be back in Dallas. And if he was on the open market right now, Denver and Houston would be maneuvering to try to secure his services. But I understand where Jerry's coming from. I mean, the last time this guy was healthy, albeit 2 years ago, I believe he had a QB rating of like 112.8 for the season. Like, I remember him being a very legitimate MVP candidate. You know, he's a very functional guy. He does things that very few people can do, and I understand there's injury concerns, and he's missed a lot of time. But, he also is the kind of guy who could put a certain team like a Denver or a Houston over the top in terms of Super Bowl contention. So I would say this could very well play out at least to the league meetings. And if I was Jerry, I'd let it play out till everybody's at the Biltmore in Arizona. And maybe Bob McNair blinks then, or, you know, maybe John Elway blinks then.
Dante Hightower, Super Bowl champion, met with the Steelers. Your take, does he end up back in New England, or is this just time ran out there?
No, I mean, it's an interesting situation. The Jets, I continue to hear, have big-time money, close to $12 million a year on the table. Mm-hmm. I don't believe anybody else is above the range of 8 to 10, but clearly the kid has trepidations about playing for the Jets and their rebuilding team. The coach might be fired in a year. I think, you know, the prospect of playing the Patriots twice a year and butting heads with Bill Belichick probably isn't what he wants to do. He really wants to stay in New England. But, I mean, if one team's at 12 or 12.5 a year and another team's at 8, at a certain point, do you just, you know, listen to your agent and say, we got to go where the money is? So that's what's going on there. The Jets literally threw him a birthday party. They know he's an outdoorsman, I'm told. They took him out to places he could hunt and fish and gave him the tough sell, sent a whole bunch of Jets paraphernalia to his mom's house and, you know, put on the full court press. But yet he left there, didn't take their offer, went to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh won't pay him any more than New England's probably going to pay him eight and a half a year. His meeting with Pittsburgh's over. He's flying home to Tennessee where he lives, and he's going to have to figure out what he wants to do in the next 24 hours. You know, does New England sweeten the pot a little bit? Maybe. But that's not usually how they operate. And, again, he's a very nice player, but he's primarily a two-down linebacker. He doesn't affect the pass game a ton in coverage. He doesn't affect the pass game a ton in terms of pass rush. He'll get you five sacks a year because he's active, because he's an athlete. But how much is it, you know, the scheme and what positions he's put in, and how much is it that he's truly a difference maker? So it's tough for, look, inside linebackers, you're asking me about Poe. You're asking me about Hightower. You haven't asked me about any receivers yet, but they're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
If you run the ball or if you primarily stop the run, you're going to have to wait for your money, and ultimately what you think you're worth probably won't be what teams think you're worth.
What is the story with Martellus Bennett? The perception is, well, he's really good, but, you know, he couldn't make it in Dallas. Giants let him go. Chicago sent him to New England. New England wins now. Now he's in Green Bay. What's the deal with him? How come nobody wants to keep this guy?
I mean, he walks to his own drummer. He's not going to be put in a box. He's, you know, even in New England, that turned out to be a short-term thing. He's going to say and do and operate in a manner in which he's going to show you, I'm a human being, I'm not a cog, I'm not a piece of meat, I'm not here to be a part of, you know, I'm not going to turn myself over mind, body, and soul to, you know, this football operation. I have other things I'm interested in. I'm a graphic artist, I'm a designer, I have different endeavors, and I play football because I'm really good at it, but I'm not a football player. So that doesn't rub everybody the right way. I mean, part of it is just where some of these organizations have been. Look, trust me, the Giants were trying to sign him back. So, you know, I know he was there a few years ago, and he was probably underutilized, and they haven't had a tight end since he left. He's had a chance to play with some good quarterbacks, and I think when he's had service, when he's had a quarterback who get the ball in his hands, he's been effective. And when he's been in offenses that don't feature the tight end, I mean, he blocks some. But he's not going to, you know, drive people into the ground. I think he's a more well-balanced tight end than some of these guys who are strictly move tight ends. But, you know, he's not going to block like a Fasano or somebody like that. So, I just think look, the guy's still making $8 million a year. He's been in the league a long time. You know, and he got pretty legitimate money from Green Bay, a team that doesn't often spend on other teams' players. So,
yeah. Hey,
he's a quality player.
Before we let you go, we're talking with Jason Lockin for CBS Sports. 49ers have a ton of money under the cap. They still do. So here we are. We're not yet a week into free agency. Evaluate what John Lynch has done so far.
It's baby steps. I mean, they have so far to go. They've inherited such a beat down, beat up franchise. Beat up in terms of perception and players not wanting to be there really anymore, and all the turmoil and tumult that's going on in that front office and the coaching ranks for so long since the unraveling of the Harbaugh era, and you know, and then beat down, just there aren't any players there. So, and it's hard to recruit them. So how do you recruit them there? You overspend, you go all in on certain guys who you know are a scheme fit, and I get that. Garcon was with Kyle. Look, do I think he's going to be, for all the money they're paying him, do I think this time a year from now people are going to be like, oh, wow, it's amazing that we still have Pierre Garcon and we're paying him all this money? No, I don't. I think he's being paid for past production, but you've got to get somebody in there. Juszczyk, I get it. I live in Baltimore. I'm very familiar with his game. Great player for what he does. $10 million guaranteed for a fullback. Boy, it's a lot of money, but yep. I get it. He was drafted by Kubiak. Kyle runs Kubiak, a lot of Kubiak stuff. He's probably going to get 75 targets. He'll probably catch 50 balls. So I get it, but, like, is it really going to move the meter? Are they closing down on Seattle or anything like that? No. And at a certain point, I think, it's just the draft is going to – they're going to live and die with the draft. I mean, it really is
sure.
As simple as that. By the time they turn the corner, if they turn the corner 2 or 3 years from now, you know, could a Juszczyk still be contributing? Maybe, but like, is it Garcon? No. Or some of these other guys? No. But you're serving two masters, right? You're trying to fulfill a long-term destiny of let's finally get out of this malaise. And in the short term, it's like we may have the worst roster in the NFL, and we just need players to try to win more than two games next year. You know, and so you can't worry about the long term and every single thing you do. Because short-term, like, you need bodies. Like, you need guys who have some sort of an NFL pedigree just to try to, you know, again, be somewhat competitive next season. So, it's going to be a long grind. Lynch has a lot to learn. He's very green. And we'll just have to see where this thing goes.
Great stuff, Jason.
Wow.
Great stuff. Appreciate it very much.
My pleasure. No worries, guys. Thank you.
All right, take care. That's Jason Lock and 4 CBS Sports. Doug?